Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. With less than a week to go before Ohio's primary, election officials are implementing several changes to ensure voting goes off while limiting exposure to populations vulnerable to coronavirus. On Monday, Governor Mike DeWine announced that three people, all from Cuyahoga County, had tested positive for COVID-19. That's the disease caused by coronavirus. On Tuesday, Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose directed the state's 88 counties to relocate any voting sites located at senior living facilities. Of course, seniors are the most vulnerable to COVID-19. 16 polling places in Franklin County will move, affecting some 21,000 voters. Joining us on All Sides right now is Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose. Mr. Secretary, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you so much, Mike. Great to be on the show.
It's tough enough to run an election, but now you have to deal with this. How's it going?
You know, it's going well, and it is the dedication of over 35,000 poll workers around the state that really makes Election Day possible. It's these bipartisan teams that work to pull off an honest and fair election, and it's, you know, it's something that we've started to sort of feel is ubiquitous or just it happens in the background, but it is the hard work and dedication of a large team of people that makes it happen, and you're seeing that firsthand. They're creative and adaptable and making sure that the voices of Ohioans are heard on Election Day.
Of course, the big news is that polling places being moved away from senior living facilities. How many polling places around the state are having to be relocated?
You know, the number's close to 150. We've got the exact list at voteohio.gov/coronafacts. That's the website that we have started with all the information about the preparations that we're making here at the Ohio Secretary of State's office to make sure that Election Day is safe. But also that the polls are accessible to every Ohioan. And so that's one of those things that's non-negotiable. Public health and safety has to be our first priority. But by acting quickly and decisively here on Monday, we were able to make sure that it's still an opportunity for every Ohioan to vote as well.
Of those more than 100 sites, how many voters are actually going to have to find a new place?
You know, don't have the number for those, and it varies because some of those sites are multiple precinct locations. So in most places in Ohio, a polling location doesn't just have one precinct. So that's not a number that I have because it would be based on how many precincts are actually voting at those locations. But suffice to say, a large number of Ohioans are impacted, and that's why we're working to get the word out. We're working with community organizations like the NAACP and the League of Women Voters and the A. Philip Randolph Institute as well, as making sure that we're engaging aggressively on social media. The good news is that we've got time to get the word out so that every Ohioan can be informed. And again, the place to check your polling location is at voteohio.gov/coronafacts.
It is a tight timetable, but is there any plans to send out a postcard? Can you do that feasibly to send a postcard to these voters or in these precincts?
You know, some counties are planning to do that. We are leaving that choice up to them as far as whether it's practicable or not to get that done. For most counties, they're going to have that decision made about the new polling location that they're replacing the senior facility with, hopefully today or tomorrow. And so there may be an opportunity to do that. But remember that Ohio's boards of elections reflect the great diversity of our state. Some boards of elections are two or three people that work in the courthouse and serve a small rural county. And then we've got other boards of elections that have 100 plus staff members, such as right here in Franklin County. So that's the best case scenario, is that we get a postcard out to everybody, but we're trying everything to make sure that we get the word out to people.
And I take it the new voting location you're trying to find, or the boards of election are trying to find, places that are relatively close to where the original place was.
Absolutely. And also that polling places have to be ADA accessible. They have to be have enough parking. There are a variety of requirements. So in many cases, what they may be doing is adding these two existing polling locations that are nearby. But the fact is that it'll be a convenient neighborhood location. It may just be a little bit further than you've had to go previously. The other thing, Mike, though, is we're reminding Ohioans that there's still plenty of time to vote by mail or
yes,
to vote as part of the early voting opportunities. And so that's really one of the things that we're trying to encourage every Ohioan to take advantage of. And if you've thought about doing it but haven't given it a try yet, maybe this is a year to try early voting in Ohio.
You know, it might be. Have you seen, I mean, the first confirmed cases were announced this week here in Ohio, but, you know, the news of this virus has been around for weeks now. Is there any indication that early voting is up, especially voting by mail, because of fears of coronavirus, or is it too early to tell that?
You know, I don't know what's causing it. I know that there is an increase in early voting, and that's also a trend that has gone back for many years.
Yeah.
It seems like each election, once people realize how convenient it is to vote by mail and how convenient it is to take advantage of early voting, that the adoption of that increases. But yeah, we have seen an increase over the 2016 numbers. We just put out numbers yesterday. About 330,000 Ohioans have requested absentee ballots already. That number was about 325,000 at this point in 2016. So, you know, a slight increase there. But the other thing that's great about vote by mail, and one of the reasons why I encourage people to do it, is it's like being able to cheat on the test, if you think about it. When you go to the polls, you have to have your decisions made, and you walk in there and cast your ballot. But if you vote by mail, you can sit there at your kitchen and flip open your laptop,
yep,
or use your smartphone and do some research and be a really informed voter and have the opportunity to spend 20, 30 minutes filling out your ballot.
So we're clear on how this works. Folks have to have that ballot postmarked, have to have it filled out and in the mail by when?
So it has to be postmarked by Monday the 16th if you're going to mail it back. And so that's why we're really encouraging people to request their absentee ballot today if they haven't. The place to do that is voteohio.gov. The form is right there on the website. You print it off, you mail it to your Board of Elections, and you can track your ballot just like you can track a package that you order online. That's one thing that a lot of Ohioans don't realize. But voteohio.gov is the place to track your ballot, so you can see that the Board of Elections has mailed it to you. You can see that they've received it back. And I'm also ordering, and a couple days ago I ordered all the Boards of Elections to make curbside drop-off available on Tuesday the 17th, which is Election Day. So anybody that has a vote-by-mail ballot and doesn't want to mail it back in can be completely confident that it was arrived on time, that it had arrived on time, just by showing up at your county Board of Elections on Election Day to drop it off. But you cannot drop your absentee ballot off at your polling location. It has to be at the Board of Elections, and there'll be folks out there by the curb waiting to get it from you right there through the car window.
So if you were to request an absentee ballot today on Wednesday, you're confident the Boards of Election can turn it around and get it out to you in the mail, and so you can get it back by Monday or Tuesday at the latest if you drop it off at a polling place or at the Board of Election?
Yeah, they will turn those immediately. But again, today's the day to make those vote-by-mail requests.
Okay. Yeah. Of course, we're talking with Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose. We're talking about how the coronavirus is affecting Election Day, primary Election Day, which is now 6 days away here in Ohio. Governor DeWine mentioned that schools might also be a place where you want to consider moving polling locations, but that is too difficult, you've said, moving them away from schools?
Yeah, that's logistically not feasible. We rely on schools for polling locations heavily in Ohio, and we just simply would not be able to make the relocation of those hundreds and hundreds of polling locations. If you think about it, in many communities, the best location with ample parking and ADA accessibility in a nice government building is the school. And so that's where historically we've held elections. And that's the case really all around the world. I've done election observations out there. And what you see is that schools are often the places where polling is held really everywhere. Here are the facts, though. In many cases, the schools have already decided to not be open for instruction that day. As you know, there are a variety of days throughout the year that the schools aren't open for a variety of reasons. And in many school districts, they've decided to not have students in the building. In other cases, it's completely possible to keep the students in one part of the building and the voting in another and not have any mixing of the two. But if it comes down to a choice of relocating a school-based polling location or having students in the building, the choice would have to be if the Board of Elections chooses that, if they feel strongly about it. Then it would be best for them to not have instruction that day. But in many cases, it is safe to do so.
I voted at a school. I've never seen a student. I voted in a middle school. I've never seen a student there. Vote in the library, of course. But I've never seen a student. They do a good job of segregating the voters from the students, at least where I vote.
Yeah, I do as well. And it's actually an athletic building that's across the parking lot. So you're not even connected to the same building as the school. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways to do this. But Of course, health and safety comes first.
Yeah. Real quickly, of course, on voting day, on a primary day, there will be a lot of mingling of voters in line, voters interacting with poll workers. What precautions are being taken? What precautions are you advising local boards of election take to limit the spread of the virus on primary day?
So a couple things. Of course, we've issued a whole set of best practices. These are the things that our moms taught us, right? Wash your hands. Clean up after yourself. the voting machine vendors have put out guidance for how to sterilize the screens and that kind of thing. And we're also providing assistance financially for the boards of elections to purchase the sanitizing wipes that they'll need and the hand sanitizer and that kind of thing. It will be a safe and secure experience. But we're also trying to encourage people to sign up to be poll workers because some poll workers, particularly seniors, have expressed concern about coming. We've tried to reinforce to them that it is still safe to come and be a poll worker. But we're putting out the call to duty, if you will, to particularly young Ohioans to consider signing up to be a poll worker. There's actually still plenty of time. They'll train you this week or over the weekend. They'll pay you for your day's work on Tuesday. And you're doing a patriotic duty by coming and helping us conduct a fair and a free election on Tuesday, and they'll actually pay you for it. That shouldn't be the first motivation. The first motivation should be a sense of duty, but they will pay you for it, and it's a decent day's pay.
As you've mentioned, there's so many factors that go into turnout, especially for a primary election. Are you afraid that fears of this will keep voters away on Tuesday?
You know, I certainly hope not. Turnout is always a priority. I want to see 100% turnout. Of course, that may not be realistic, but we work hard to tell people about all the different options they have. It's safe to come and vote at your polling location. It's convenient to vote by mail. It's convenient to vote early. We've got early voting hours that continue all this week, including Saturday and Sunday. We're one of the few states in the nation that offers Sunday afternoon voting, and so take advantage of that if you're interested. And the other thing about these polling locations, understand that there's a difference between a international gathering with tens and tens of thousands of people versus a neighborhood gathering at a polling location where maybe a few hundred people, maybe just a few dozen at a time, sort of make their way throughout the day. The threat profile on that kind of a gathering is much less, and it's effectively folks that you interact with on a daily basis anyway because these are your neighbors. And so it'll be a safe experience, and every Ohioan should take advantage of it. And again, Mike, the place to sign up to be a poll worker is ohiosos.gov/defenddemocracy. I chose that name very intentionally because that's exactly what you'll be doing, ohiosos.gov/defenddemocracy. If you want to sign up to be a poll worker, you'll be joining over 35,000 of your fellow Ohioans doing this important work on Tuesday.
One more question that comes to mind. You know, you mentioned that poll workers, you may have a shortage of poll workers, and that's why you're asking folks to volunteer. Are there any preparations if there are long lines of keeping polls open later than when they close at 7:30 on Tuesday?
You know, that's certainly not the plan. I can tell you that every Ohioan should know that if they're in line by 7:30, they will be afforded the opportunity to vote. That's nothing new. That's always been the case. But we also are encouraging folks not to procrastinate.
Yeah.
If you've got your mind made up about who you're voting for, then please consider getting it done right now. And that's that early voting and vote by mail. We would prefer you not wait until 7:15 on election night as well. But get to the polls and make sure that you're in line and your vote will be counted. But I don't see any need forthcoming for extending what is already an ample period of voting in the state of Ohio. It's just a matter of us taking responsibility and getting out there and making our voice heard at this point.
Frank LaRose, Ohio Secretary of State, thanks for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Good luck on Tuesday.
Thank you, sir.
When we come back, we'll talk about community banking, the local banks, far fewer of them than they were in decades past. We'll find out why that is and what state lawmakers want to do to try to help the community bank when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Of course, Big Tuesday was last night, the big election. Joe Biden had another good night winning Michigan, defeating Bernie Sanders there. Ken Rudin will join Ann Fisher tomorrow on All Sides at 10 o'clock. He and she will break down what happened on Big Tuesday and, of course, preview Ohio's big primary election next Tuesday, St. Patrick's Day here in Ohio. So that's tomorrow. It's 10 o'clock here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Right now we're going to talk about local community banks. More than 300 small, locally owned banks operated in Ohio in the 1990s. Now that number is just more than half that. Roughly 175 of these community banks are still open in the Buckeye State. Supporters say local banks often give better loans to young people and support schools and community organizations. But they can pay more in taxes than big banks, and community banks are struggling to survive, according to supporters of that legislation. Joining us to discuss this is Columbus Dispatch reporter Anna Staver, who has been covering the issue down on Capitol Square. Anna, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for having me.
First, can we start with a definition really quickly? What separates a community bank from a big chain bank, for lack of a better term?
Well, there's a couple of different things, but some of the main points are obviously the number of assets that they have. So sort of $10 billion in assets and under is considered a small bank. It also deals with whether you have shareholders and pay dividends. So community banks, you know, make the argument that they tend to be more capitalized. Basically, they have more in savings because they aren't paying those quarterly dividends out. So they're just sort of structured a little bit different.
Uh-huh. So your local banks are the ones you see on the corner where like Huntington or Chase or things like those are the bigger banks. That's what we're talking about here. Why have so many community banks disappeared over the past several decades?
Well, I think it's a whole mix of things. Obviously, the recession wasn't good for anybody in the banking industry, large or small. There's also been some pretty big change in regulation. So after the recession, Dodd-Frank was passed, and it put a lot of restrictions on banks, both large and small. The big banks seem just better able to absorb those changes than little banks. And also there was just a real push across all industries, I think, towards sort of national chains, right? From the grocery store to the hardware store to the local bank, you know, it seemed to be profitable to buy up these places and convert them into national branches.
So we saw a lot of acquisitions, big banks coming in and taking over the small banks, or the small banks selling out to the bigger banks.
Yeah. I guess you could say they made them offers they couldn't refuse.
Yes. I mean, we've seen consolidation everywhere. Airline industry, banking industry, like you said, it's just part of the deal these days. Ohio community banks, any different than community banks in other states around the country?
From my reporting and research, what I found really interesting is Ohio seems to be doing a little bit better than some states. They're you know, if you look at some of the national reports, more than one-third of rural counties in the U.S. have no locally owned bank, but that doesn't appear to be the case in parts of rural Ohio. So we seem to be doing a little bit better, so not great, but say better than some other states in the country.
Is there a rural-urban divide here? Do you tend to see these community banks more in the rural areas, or are they in neighborhoods in Columbus and Cleveland and Cincinnati? We just don't recognize them because we just drive by them and get lost among all the buildings.
Actually, the two banks, well, there's one that has opened in the last decade in Ohio, and there's a second one that's about to open, and they're both suburban sort of metro area banks. So Riverside Bank of Dublin is getting ready to open this summer, and it will be the second one to open in a decade. So actually, you see more development of community banks in bigger cities than you do in rural areas.
So that's why rural areas really, they're feeling the pinch of this perhaps more than the suburban areas or urban areas.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's also harder, you know, to get a national branch to come out and to do lending in an area where perhaps, say, they don't see the value in it.
We're talking with Anna Staver, State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're talking community banks, their value to their communities, what struggles they face, and legislation to help support them. It's pending before lawmakers at the State House. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, supporters say, and there's evidence to this, that community banks offer different services than the larger banks. What's going on in the community bank that doesn't necessarily happen with a large chain bank in your neighborhood?
Well, the argument that community bankers make is that they get to know people over time, right? So you've known this customer for, say, 10, 20 years, and then he comes in with his kids who are in their early 20s. And this is something I heard a lot from rural banks like First Federal out in Licking County is, you know, a new construction loan, generally you want 20% down, but say 25, 26, you don't have that kind of capital. So the big bank might say, you know, you don't meet the criteria for a construction loan, but the community bank says, well, we'll take, you know, the 5 acres that your parents have deeded you and perhaps part of their farm or their house that they own outright as collateral for a few years. You'll make some good payments. We'll take your parents off, and that's how we'll make it work for you.
What is the legislation before lawmakers? How would it help these community banks?
Well, it's changed pretty substantially. Initially, the bill, as it was looking in committee, would have lowered taxes on smaller community banks, but that part got stripped out in committee. And as it's passed right now, what it would do is encourage new banks to open. They're called de novo. I'm not quite sure why, but de novo banks wouldn't pay the tax for 3 years. So it would give them like a 3-year window to get set up, to get on their feet, to get going before they had to start paying taxes. Because their taxes are paid on their capital, not on their profit. So it's the money you have, not the money you make. And giving them 3 years to build up the money they have, in theory, should help more of them open.
Is there a rush to open new banks?
There is not. We've had one open in like the last decade, and there's a second one about to open. And nationally, there's been a real dip in the opening of new community banks to the point that the FDIC chair has, Jelena McWilliams, has made it a real point to try and streamline the process, to try and move to get more community banks to open.
So they're trying to offer incentives for other folks to enter that field.
Yeah, she's basically said de novo activity, I think, is not where it should be. And so she has said, we're going to make it as easy as possible and work with you guys to get you through the process. Because, I mean, getting FDIC insured and approved, there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of back and forth.
So this legislation is great for folks who are thinking about opening up a new bank, perhaps, if it gets to the legislature. But my understanding is that because taxes are paid on capital, that if you're an existing community bank, you're paying more, you know, relatively speaking, than a big bank.
It's also because smaller banks tend to be more heavily capitalized. So, I mean, you would think that's a good thing, right? We have more in savings, but then you're paying more, right? So if like a national chain has maybe 8 to 10% capitalization, you know, community banks can have like well over 14.
We're going to hear from the other arguments for and against this legislation as this program continues. But so why not lower the taxes on these small banks? Why was that pulled from the legislation?
A couple of reasons. So, you know, some of the opposition was a concern about the way the bill was written that came from folks like Zach Schiller, sort of the more progressive wing, who said, look, this also lowers taxes across the board. So you're giving cuts to the small guys, which is good, but you're also giving cuts to bigger banks, which they weren't terribly supportive of. And then there's just sort of the question of there's been a lot of federal tax cuts and incentives towards banks over the years, and there's the larger question of whether this would actually encourage people to stay open, help them, like whether it would be effective, essentially.
So the federal government is offering some breaks to help community banks?
They have been just sort of generally making cuts for banking. Mm-hmm. So it affects everybody.
All right. We'll have joining us in the conversation is Mike Adelman. He is president and CEO of the Ohio Bankers League. We'll get his take on this issue. Mike, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning.
Mike, you are president, CEO of the Ohio Bankers League. First, who do you represent?
Yes, we represent approximately 180 of the community banks doing business in the state of Ohio, as well as the larger regional banks.
Okay. What is your take on the state? Let's start with the state of community banking in Ohio. How would you characterize its health right now?
I would tell you, Mike, in terms of our health, we're very optimistic. And the important thing to keep in mind here is that a bank is a reflection of the community that it serves. You take Central Ohio, and really the economy here has been doing really, really well for quite some time. And the banks operating in Central Ohio are doing really, really well also. You look elsewhere around the state, maybe they don't see the highs that we do here in Columbus, but our understanding from surveying the membership so quite recently is that they're all doing very well also.
When you look at the numbers, 300 back in the 90s, 175 now as far as the number of these community banks, is the reduction in the number troublesome to the Bankers League?
In terms of the Bankers League, it is from the standpoint that we want a maximum number of members, but we understand the dynamic nature of the banking industry and the current day realities. And just like other businesses, they're looking for economies of scale. Banks specifically have a lot of costs. It's staying on top of compliance, the ever-changing regulatory landscape. They need to have the best technology and certainly make sure they're safekeeping their customer data. They take that very, very seriously, and there's a cost to it. And then one of the increasing challenges that the banks have had, especially in our rural communities, is that inability to find talent.
Folks to work at the bank, or bankers to write loans and do business with local businesses?
Exactly. I came from a small town myself and left to go to college and never went back. And we're seeing those challenges come to play out over time in our smaller communities, just that so-called brain drain. And so it's a very real issue. And fortunately, we've got a program at the Ohio Bankers League looking to turn that a different direction through our foundation. We set up a very innovative program with Central State University, and it's had 3 years now where it's been up and running, and it's an intensive banking curriculum during the summer for a cohort of approximately 30 students, and then we place them with internships in community banks, essentially from downtown Cincinnati up to Springfield. So we've had about half dozen to eight banks participating in that each summer. So we're doing everything that we can to make sure that we are out there putting practical solutions to our members to ensure their sustainability for a long time.
Anna Staver from the Columbus Dispatch and the community bankers you've talked to, is that a big factor in their ability to maintain profitability, to stay open, talent acquisition, getting folks to want to work there?
Yeah, and I think that's sort of true of no matter what business you're looking at, right? When you look at our rural communities, like the big question for most small town mayors and city councils and is how do we get people to stay in our area? How do we convince them, you know, our high school graduates, our best and our brightest, to come home?
Mike Adelman from the Ohio Bankers League, do you agree with the characterization that a community bank tends to be a little bit more, you know, generous, if that's the right word, or more accommodating to folks who live in that community looking for a loan, whether it's for a new home or a new business there, than a big chain bank?
You know, Mike, the way I would respond to that is all banking's relationships. And banks want to have deep roots in the communities, want to serve them at every stage of life. New homeowner, new expanding family, kids heading off to college, and just continue that cycle. What you see, you know, certainly in a smaller community is the opportunity where those bankers really have to rub shoulders much more frequently, I will say, with those customers, just like Mr. Thompson, who was interviewed for the Dispatch article. I don't know of anyone in Newark that doesn't know Paul, and just what a great guy he is, and the team he has working at that bank, focused on the needs of that community every day. You know, these banks, they've got their names on the scoreboard at the high school athletic field. They're putting shirts on teams in other instances, and helping out families in need. So at the end of the day, it's all about relationships and wanting to have deep roots, because they're going to school and church and seeing each other at the grocery store every day.
No, I'm guessing if we had folks from Huntington and Chase and PNC on right now, they would say they do a lot for the community as well. But is it a different kind of support?
You know, I would say where the difference maybe is coming in that you're focusing in on, Mike, is decision-making and maybe the nimbleness that a smaller bank may have to approve a loan than a large bank. But at the end of the day, all the banks in Ohio are very, very successful because they are dialed into the needs of their communities.
Anna Staver from the Columbus Dispatch, State House reporter. Fill us in on what the status of this legislation is right now. We're going to talk to the sponsor in just a moment, but I want to get your take on where this legislation stands, what the chances of passage are, that kind of thing.
So it passed pretty significantly out of the House of Representatives. So now it's over to the Senate. The Senate hasn't taken it up yet, but the school voucher debate has kind of sucked up a lot of the oxygen over at the Capitol lately. But when I asked Representative Marin, who sponsored the bill, he gave me a 60-40 chance of passage through the Senate.
Any chances of changing it so the taxes are lowered from the original proposal? Is that definitely off the table right now?
I get the impression that that's off the table at the moment because he had trouble getting it out of his chamber, and it doesn't sound like he has any plans to try and put it back in.
You had a quote in your story that it's tough to pass legislation for banks these days because of, still the hangover from the Great Recession and things like that. Is that a problem down at the State House? Anna?
Yeah, I would say, the idea, right, on its face, right, you're giving a tax cut to a bank. It sounds a little funny to people until you explain it, and I think that's the challenge of any piece of legislation. Also, when you're talking about something like the FIT, which is the financial institutions tax, it's a little bit wonky to begin with. So I think it's one of those bills that requires a lot of education, right? Like, you have to learn about the FIT and how it works, and then you have to learn about the banks. And, that's a longer conversation. It's not the kind of bill where you read it and just right off the bat you know how you feel about it.
Yeah, and let's face it, our relationship with banks has certainly changed since the 1990s. I very rarely have to go into a branch. I'm not alone in that regard with electronic banking, and even ATMs seemed old school these days. Anna Staver, State House reporter with the Columbus Dispatch, will say farewell to you right now. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides.
Thank you.
Mike Adelman will stay with us, and we'll talk with Representative Derek Marin from Lucas County. He is the sponsor of this bill aimed at helping these community banks in our state. That's when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. We're talking about community banks, the local banks here in Ohio. The numbers have declined pretty significantly in the past couple of decades. We now have 175 of them, give or take, in Ohio. We had as high as 300 back in the 1990s. There's a proposal before the state lawmakers aimed at helping these community banks, which are seen as being more responsive to their communities, helping small business owners, farmers, young homeowners out with more accommodating loans, that kind of thing. Also more responsive to local community groups, local schools, local softball and baseball teams, and that kind of thing. Joining us now is Representative Derek Marin from Lucas County, up Toledo area. He is the sponsor of the bill aimed at helping these community banks. Representative Marin, thanks for joining us here on All Sides.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be with you this morning.
We've sort of summarized briefly your legislation, but what is your main goal with this legislation? What are you trying to do?
Well, we're trying to increase market competition, provide consumers increased access to banking, and increase choices. When consumers have more opportunities to find a business or a product that serves them, I think that is a win for consumers and a win for the economy. And what my legislation is designed to do is hopefully spur additional investment in Ohio and provide help more banks get started, which I think is good for consumers in Ohio.
What is the biggest hurdle facing these small community banks right now?
Well, there's multiple issues. A lot of it has to do with increased regulation over the years. But as it's been, you know, discussed on the show already today, there's only been about one new bank started in Ohio in the last decade. And when you consider, you know, Ohio is the state of over 11 million people, to only have one new bank start, you know, shows that there is, you know, a glaring challenge and hurdle for individuals to start a new bank. And when you see that we've lost about 75 new banks, a net loss of 75 banks at the same time, you see that banking choices are certainly, you know, going down, especially in the rural areas where some of these community banks are the only banks that are available from a physical location. Of course, we have online banking.
Yeah, that was my next question. We hear a lot about regulation being burdensome, and that's a big hurdle for banks, large and small. But let's face it, the way we bank has changed. You can do all of your banking online. For some bank, you don't even know where it is. And I know that rural areas have limited access to some, in some cases, to the internet, so we'll get to that in a moment. But we very rarely go into a bank branch anymore. We use the ATM. Maybe we use the drive-through. Sometimes we don't even use the ATM. We're using Venmo. We're using all of these, Apple Pay. We're using all of these things. Is it just that banking that is the foundation of a community bank is, you know, just the industry is changing so much that it's not as feasible anymore?
Well, I certainly believe that that's a part of it. But a lot of it has to do with mergers and acquisitions, where you have big banks, you know, buying up and gobbling up small banks and trying to get more of the market share that way. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that. I'm a free market individual, and but at the same time, I realize that the more competition you have, the better. And I want to see you know, vibrant growth among, you know, startups, and that's what we're trying to get done.
Representative Derek Marin, Republican from the Toledo area, is joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about community banks, how they have declined in Ohio and across the country, and efforts to try to give them some help, at least in getting started here in Ohio. So your legislation would do what for new banks, folks who want to start a community bank in their county, in their city, in their town?
Sure, but my legislation would exempt new banks for their first 3 years from the financial institutions tax. So they wouldn't pay the financial institutions tax, which is the main tax on banks. So the actual practical financial impact mostly would depend, but it most likely would be in the range of saving a new bank $100,000 to maybe $300,000 or $400,000 a year. And, you know, what I tell people is, you know, what do we have to lose? Because we've only had one bank start in the last decade. So if this bill was law, we would have maybe lost, you know, if it was $100,000 a year, we'd have lost, you know, $300,000 over the last decade. So it's a very small break, but it's a break that could have a significant positive impact on those banks, the new banks being started. And the tax savings is going to be to hire new people, likely going to be to have more money to be able to loan out, and ultimately to help stabilize that bank in a very difficult time. It's very difficult to start a bank, let alone be able to get it off the ground and stabilize it. So, you know, I view it as the government really not piling on something that is very difficult to do. It's very difficult to start a business, and we're saying, hey, we're going to give you guys a little bit of a breather, help you get off the ground and stabilize before the government comes in trying to get its share of what it thinks is appropriate.
Is there a great demand for this help? Are there folks out there ready to start a community bank if they had this help that would save them $100,000, $400,000 over the first 3 years?
Well, there's several banks. We believe there's several banks in the pipeline that are trying to open or are in the process of it, which is good. Is this going to be the one catalyst that pushes people over to start a bank? You know, likely not. I mean, there's multiple factors to start a bank, but this is certainly something that would be helpful. And I'm hopeful that, you know, with this type of a bill, you know, we can say that Ohio has some of the most favorable banking laws in the country. And, you know, this type of legislation, if we get it signed into law, will be known in the banking industry in every state in America, and they'll know that Ohio is open for business, that we're friendly to business, and we're friendly to new startup banks. And, you know, hopefully that momentum you know, leads to more interest in Ohio and more entrepreneurs and investors coming to our state. You know, Mike, you know, perception is very important. And it's very important that people all across our nation perceive Ohio as being business friendly and being open for business. And that's part of this, too.
Mike Adelman, President and CEO of the Ohio Bankers League, is still with us. Mike, what do you see as the demand for these banks, these new banks that would possibly open because of this legislation or because of a business climate here in Ohio? What is there a great demand for this?
There's definitely interest in it, Mike, and we applaud all of Representative Marin's efforts on reducing the tax burden for Ohio's community banks in particular. He has been very persistent on it. And there was a provision that he was very successful in getting passed last year that would essentially put a cap on the amount of tax that the most highly capitalized banks in the state need to pay. So whereas the regulatory requirements coming out of the recession were increased on the banks to hold more capital, we felt that the tax structure in Ohio was punitive. And Representative Marin and his colleagues in the General Assembly were very receptive to that. And so then you play it out for a new bank that's in formation, a de novo, as we've referenced it here. Every little bit does help. And so stick with the scenario that Representative Marin referenced. That bank in formation has an additional $100,000. They can deploy that to find the best possible compliance person, the best possible CFO. You know, they can just throw a little bit more money their way or invest in some additional bells and whistles in terms of technology so that they can truly meet their customers where they are. So the requirements nationally are significant to start up a new bank, and that's not changing. They're not reducing those at all. But where is it? That bank in formation, their first 3 years that they're really trying to get that institution off the ground. How is it we can make sure we're not cutting holes in their pockets and bleeding out some critical resources in the way of taxes would be very, very much appreciated. There is the one example, as we've referenced here, a bank that opened up last year in Bexley, and then another bank in formation that should be open this year in Dublin. And we're aware of a handful of other investor groups, successful businessmen and women around the state who are pulling together the resources and developing the plans to open banks elsewhere in the state.
We're talking community banking here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. You just heard from Mike Adelman. He is president and CEO of the Ohio Bankers League. Also with us is Representative Derek Marin from Lucas County. He's the sponsor of a bill aimed at helping community banks. Representative Marin, you know, as I listen to where these new banks are opening, the few that are or hoping to open, I hear cities like Dublin and Bexley. Is there a fear that if this passes, the community banks will open in affluent suburbs and not in Vinton County, not in southern Ohio, not in rural areas that may need the community bank?
No, I don't have that fear. I mean, you know, when any good thing happens in our state, we need to applaud it and be glad for it, and not necessarily, have fears of regionalism or, you know, one community succeeding over the other. But I think the legislation it covers the entire state and will encourage growth on every corner of the state. And, you know, I'm happy to see that, you know, Central Ohio, has a couple in the pipeline, and hopefully they can get started and be a benefit for Central Ohio.
Now, your original bill, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but your original bill had another tax break for banks, and it was aimed at helping these smaller banks who actually pay more in taxes than the big banks like Chase and Citibank and all that. Why the decision to remove that or take that out?
Sure. It was more or less a practical decision. I tried to get that provision inserted into the state budget and was unsuccessful. It's always difficult to lower taxes for anyone, but let alone banks. There's not a lot of affinity to lower taxes for banks, and we're trying to create more parity. I was trying to create more tax parity for all banks and wasn't able to do that. So you know, in government and politics, you got to realize where you can move forward and, you know, where you can't at that specific time. So we move forward with what we call like a 14% cap, which caps the tax that small banks and community banks pay, and that helps approximately maybe 50 banks around the state. So we won on that issue, and now we're moving forward on the three-year exemption for new startups. So, you know, hopefully we're going to get, you know, 50% of my original bill, you know, passed into law, and I think that will be a good win.
Any thoughts of scaling that tax break that was pulled? I mean, so it benefits the community bank. That might be a little bit more politically palatable to voters and to state reps and senators to say, look, we're not trying to help the big guys. We're trying to help, you know, the banker down the street who you have a relationship for 20 years.
Well, there's a lot of people still looking at it. Uh-huh. You know, there's over 500 bills that have been introduced in the Ohio House. And, you know, part of getting a bill through the legislature is educating and talking with your colleagues. And I've had the opportunity to, you know, talk with leadership and many of my colleagues about this issue. And people are gaining a better understanding of it and why it's important. And I think we have, you know, momentum on this issue. And I think, you know, we've actually, you know, become a bipartisan effort where we have the Democrats recognizing, hey, we realize we need more banks necessarily. We need to help the rural communities. And, you know, that's a pretty big development when you have the Democrats saying, hey, we'll actually support a small tax cut. We're going to actually, you know, support, you know, businesses and, you know, agreeing on a small tax package. So I think that speaks to the underlining message of this bill when people understand what we're trying to do, that we're trying to create consumer choice, we're trying to create more market competition, and that's a good thing. So yeah, we're gaining momentum on this, and and since it's bipartisan, I think it will even spur the discussion forward.
Mike Adelman from the Ohio Bankers League. You know, I'm trying to think of industries where there's been a reverse consolidation, where big companies aren't always swallowing up the little guys, where small businesses are opening in the communities. And the one that comes to mind is craft breweries. You know, we have the big Anheuser-Busch and you know, Coors and all these, you know, banking companies that have merged, but yet these small little craft breweries open, and some do very well, some are very successful. Is there any way that in the long run that community banks can buck the trend and not be forced to consolidate with a big bank? Is that industry,
you know,
can it do that?
Well, what's interesting, Mike, is that there's actually a misnomer that big banks are buying the small banks. In fact, where the consolidation is occurring, definitely within Ohio, it's community banks getting together.
I see.
It's two banks looking for that economies of scale, or one has been thinking about branching into a particular community, or maybe they're thinking succession planning. So, hey, what does our future leadership structure look like in the bank? And they see somebody that really impresses them in that community elsewhere in the county or just across the county line. And so those two banks get together. So of the consolidation we have seen in Ohio over the last 10 years, it's been approximately 7 banks per year are being lost to acquisition. It's really been for those reasons. How can they find economies of scale, investing in technology, staying on top of the compliance costs? In terms of that craft brewery example, there's certainly a big push for buying local, right?
Yeah.
And supporting any of those businesses in your communities. And I know that a number of banks around the state of Ohio, as well as nationally, have really effectively seized on that and have really strengthened their brand going down that path.
Representative Derek Marion, just about a minute left. If, say, this passes, small banks still have struggles because of that technology, the way people bank, pressures for, you know, economies of scale, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the challenge ongoing is going to be tough, and I'm looking for, you know, practical ways to help them from the government perspective. You know, government can't solve every problem in the world, but this legislation is centered around what is government control and what is government impact. And one of the things that we control is taxes. So we're trying to do from a state perspective what we can actually, tangibly do and control. And that's why I think this bill is a reasonable step forward to provide a very, very small incentive, but I think a fair incentive to say, hey, if you're trying to start a business in this state, you're trying to hire people, you're trying to provide capital to businesses, we're going to give you a little bit of a breather and let you get your feet off the ground before we start levying taxes on you.
Thanks, Representative Derek Marin from Lucas County. Also, Mike Adelman, President and CEO of the Ohio Bankers League. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides as we discussed really a very important community resource. I think we all can agree that a local banker is preferable, one that knows you. That's it for All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson on 89.7 NPR News.